1, 2, 3. Hello?
Hello?
Is it working? No. Can you hear me? Not loud enough. Sound like rock junkies. Turn it up, man. Turn it up. Well, well, well. Gluttons for punishment. But you won't be disappointed. This will be, it will be 20 years since I taught the first trainer's training in Santa Cruz some years ago. Most of those people, actually there's one survivor back here, Max Steinbach, some of you may remember. He's the first person to bring NLP to Toronto and me years ago. I was just out in the hallway and there was one person who was in that seminar and they're still alive. She walked up to me and said hello, and I said, do you remember, and pointed to Max, and she looked at him and went, it's always so surprised to see each other still living. Makes me wonder. Being here for the next 8 days. Where's the strobe light? That's what I want to know. You guys are getting, take us back down through the years. For the next 8 days, what we're going to do is to take NLP technology and a little design human engineering, a lot of hypnosis, and a tremendous amount of fear, my guess. That's just based on past history. Maybe you don't have that up here. And see if we can convert it into something by which you'll be able to come up on this stage by the end, gracefully and smoothly, and be able to apply that technology. Now, there's a couple of things that I want you to do by the time you arrive tomorrow. So get out your brain, your notebook, or whatever you use. The most important of which is I want you to come back with a videotape, blank videotape. And I want on the side of it to be written your name legibly and in big letters. Because what we're going to do is, during the course of the next 8 days, there'll be various moments at which you're going to demonstrate your skills. And we want a record of that. You get to keep it, however. I have enough of them already. That's the purpose of this, is so that you can see what improvements you make and what directions you need to go in. Because hopefully you will continue to get better when you leave here. I'm always surprised by when I go back to a place, people walk up to me with the most surprised look and they go, you've really changed. Now, if I didn't, I'd be the biggest hypocrite on the face of the earth. Absolutely and utterly. That if in all these years I didn't change things about myself and about the way I teach and about the way people learn. Now, I'm going to teach you some of my secrets. And you are sworn to secrecy with these things. These are tools for you to use on people, but to discuss it with them doesn't help because they won't understand. Because probably the most important piece, other than getting a little practice, getting a chance to learn some simple basic things that have to do with the difference between talking to a lot of people versus one person. Because I figure any time it's over four, it's totally different than one. And that sometimes family therapy is more like teaching an audience, especially Satira referred to family to me, 29 members. I always referred to them as the Minx family. These were all children, too. These weren't grandchildren. These were two adults and 27 children. Yeah, I like this. The mother says to me, I said, what do you need here? And the mother said, well, I feel tired all the time. And I looked at her and I said, you have every right, dear. Actually, it was kind of interesting. They were, he was about 82. She was in her late 60s. And they had a 2-year-old kid. And I said, well, the one thing I don't have to worry about in this family, no shortage of sex. He smiled. She went. Now, the other thing is for some reason, I don't know, they lived out in the country. I guess there wasn't much else to do. But they had three sets of twins. Now, I don't know about you guys, but when I work with people, I like them to look differently. And I have enough trouble with names as it is. Now, there's a couple of things that we're going to do, and one of them is tonight we're going to do a little tune-up. Tomorrow I'm going to start you right off, and what we're going to do is we're going to teach this hotel how this works. What I like to do is to put a set of steps on either side of the stage, and we're going to cycle you through, give you a chance. Now, it doesn't matter. I know some of you, and you probably don't teach NLP. It doesn't matter what you teach, whether you give sales presentations or not. One of the things I want to do is to get you to realize that it's not just the skills you use as a trainer. It's also your internal state. Being able to adjust your internal state will become a very powerful thing, because you not only want to adjust your state internally in terms of what's going on inside of you, because you're going to have very little knowledge of that if you're good at this. You haven't got time for it. But in terms of the state you go into externally, your ability to see what goes on in a room. Now, in this room, there's 50, 55 people in here. Whether there's 55 people in here, or I did a thing for General Motors where there was 10,000, right? No different. It's not any different. You still have to view it as if you're sitting in your own living room. Because when you teach people, you have to take absolute and total control in comfort. You can't be a dictator. You have to just be one anyway. You have to teach it. Because if you can't take control of an audience, you will never get through anything. Trust me. There are people, no matter where you go, that think they know how you should teach them what you know, even though they don't know it. Now, fortunately, first rule of thumb is that they organize themselves in the room so you know exactly who they are before you start. Isn't that nice? Now, there are certain places they have to sit, and they will literally fight over the chairs. Isn't that funny? And if somebody sits in their chair on a break, they'll come back and throw a shit fit like you won't believe. The same kind they're going to throw with you if you allow them to. Now, there are certain things you can do, and there are reasons why, because it all starts with understanding. When people say to you, they go, oh, I understand. Most of the time you're aware they haven't the faintest fucking idea what you're talking about. However, whatever you've said, they've managed to make a picture in what constitutes understanding. Now, when they do this, of course, they have to do it by the ardent rule of submodalities. So stop for a moment, and if you think, right, now, if understanding for you, right, let's say understanding is right here. Where are you going to sit if you're out there? This is your right hand. This is the left hand. Put an R and L on it. And when you turn around, they're reversed. Oh. They're going to sit over there. Now, if they can't get that chair, they're going to sit behind them and behind them. Right? If that's where it is. Now, if understanding for them, okay, is directly in front, great big picture, right? They're going to fight for these chairs here in the middle. And if they have to sit on this side, they'll tilt themselves this way. There'll be people who just sit in this chair, but then there'll be the ones that tilt themselves. Watch out for them. They're trouble. Now, the thing is it does give you the added advantage, since you're not nailed down, of being able to get up and move. But it's not just them. It's everyone. Because we were taught through the years of elementary school to sit in one chair and stay there. I don't know if they do that in this country. In the U.S., typically it's alphabetically. And sometimes not, but usually pretty close to it. You'll find that it begins to tell you in an audience how people sort understanding, because they don't go there to be confused. Now, there are some people that have more flexibility. And some people are smart enough to realize the further back you go, the more angles you have. Now, there's even the points at which people will shift in the course of an audience. Right? There are some people that come there to disagree with you. People who sort by difference. Right? Now, you can save yourself a lot of trouble, because if you start out and you start to say something and there's somebody who constantly finds fault with it, tell them to sit over here. If you you simply reverse them in the audience, you won't hear a peep out of them. Because when they're sorting for difference, they can only do it in one place. Now, there is another thing you can do, which is to change your location. I love to do that. It's a lot of fun. Because if I'm going to get through what I want to get through, I have to start with the rule of thumb, which is I need to install in people what they need to know before I give them the information. Because if you were to try to take the things I'm talking about now, make notes about all of it, memorize it for 8 days, when you looked back at your notes from the first day, you go, what the hell is this about? Because before you can use any skill, you have to have the perceptions that go with it, and that requires installation. Now, the need for installation, for being able to induce the state by which people can learn information, requires for us something that starts tomorrow. It'll be a little different for us in this than it is normally, in the sense that we have to change your experience of being up here. Most of you, not all of you, but most of you. I've done this before, by the way. Because a lot of you have learned through the years, and this is not your fault, by the way. This is the fault of the educational system in every country on the planet. Because they do not bring you up in front of the class so that you'll enjoy life. Do they? They do things like they go, Mr. Marcus, what's so interesting down there on the floor? You can eat your grass, man. Whack! You were a troublemaker, too, weren't you? And I can tell. They always sit there. Every time I look at him, I go, there he is. He got in trouble in school. As soon as he wasn't paying attention, they said, well, like, would you like to have the whole class show us how you do it? Right? And they'd walk up there, and then they'd try to humiliate you as best they could. Most of them weren't that good at it, especially in the U.S., we pay teachers less than we pay tellers at the supermarket. Think about that. It's a distorted value system. However, my hope is the educational system will fall apart. It is. I've decided it can't be repaired. You see, in our country, we have something called tenure. Which is, if you hide for 3 to 5 years, they can never fire you. Now, what kind of profession does that attract? Loafers and hiders. And believe me, you know, I tried it with my son. He sent me a note telling me that he'd missed all these days of school. He'd been gone for like a month, right? You know, and he came home, and after I beat the shit out of him, and then he said, what's wrong? And I said, you missed school for a month. And he went, well, it wasn't a whole month. And he said, you know, it's like those soap operas, you know. Sometimes when I'm home, you know, and then I'll stay home a month later, it's like I haven't missed much. So he thought maybe he could just drop by once a month. You know? And probably, given what they were doing. I went down to the school and I said, well, I'm somewhat miffed, you know, that, you know, if you're having a problem with him. And they said, well, we have a problem. There's all these things in school he doesn't do. Like his art teacher said, they gave him 7 assignments. He did 5 of them and he just didn't do the other 2. And I said to him, I asked him, I said, why didn't you do them? And he said, I didn't want to. And I said, what makes you think you get to do what you want in life? And he said, I don't know. I hear you say it all the time. So I said, well, you know, to the art teacher, I said, did you ask him? Why didn't you do him? And she said, yeah. He said he didn't want to. And I said, well, he didn't. Why didn't you give him other ones? I said, what were they? One of them was drawing lines on a page over and over and over and over and over again, right? And you couldn't use a ruler, and they had to be straight. You know, and I asked her, I said, do you drive a horse and buggy to school every day? I said, what do you mean you have to draw a straight line without a ruler? She said, it's good experience. And I said, oh, you're into experiences just because they're good for you. This is going to be your day. You see that person laying on the ground outside the door? That's the principal. That's the one that told me that sometimes you just have to strike somebody for them to learn something. Worked for me. Now, the thing is through all the years that I've been training, I mean, from GMs, people, I like this. I keynoted 10,000 drunken salesmen from insurance companies in Hawaii. Right? Let's get this. Friday night, they start at 10 o'clock. They charter flight them in with all the booze they can drink. Land them in Hawaii, cart them up in buses, and dump them into a conference room. Right? The guy goes up and pounds a hammer on this thing. Bang, 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 bang. Right? Nothing. Bang, 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 bang. Nothing. The guy turns around, looks at me, and he goes, I don't think we're going to be able to start. They're out of control. I said, no problem. I walked up, took the microphone off the podium, walked over to one of the speakers, turned the volume all the way up, and went, Rrr! I had their full attention. Just like that. And then I walked back over and I said, are you guys going to quiet down now? One guy made a noise and I walked back over and went, Arr! And I said, no. Is there anybody else that has anything they'd like to say? They were sitting there because not only it's a long flight to Hawaii, that's long enough to drink and start to get the hangover. And I reminded them that we were going to start again in the morning and they were going to be really hungover. I'll see to that. And I wouldn't be. But anyway, as they quieted down, my job was to get them motivated. Well, it seemed like they were flying already, but why motivate them in the middle of the night if they're going to sleep? So I thought, why should they sleep? I don't. You know, a couple hours a night's enough for me. Ought to be for them. Now, they wanted also to start this out, the first thing, because I wasn't supposed to go first. I was supposed to follow Fonzie the Bear from Sesame Street. Now, you guys think this is a normal profession. I got news for you. I'm into warning you of all the things that can happen to you. They had actually had the insurance company had prepared by the people that do the Muppets, this little bear coming out. And it was actually quite good. The bear came out and started to talk. Only thing is the bear obviously had stage fright. It was a brilliant piece of work because, and I mean, you could see the beads of sweat pouring off this bear. It was like doing this, like looking up at the audience and doing this. And I recognized it just like this. I said, the trainer's training. That's where it happens. Because the thing is when we do this, I want to make sure that anything bad that could happen to you as a public speaker is over with. Oops. Hey, would you rather it happened here? I got news for you. It's better it happens here because hardly anyone will notice because they're going to be inside their head creating all the self-torture you could imagine. Right? See, normally people are up there with a notepad. They're going, get on with it. Now, I'll tell you the truth about why I decided to start teaching public speaking is that, see, I kind of grew up on a stage. It to me is like my living room. I mean, by the time I was 12, I was a musician, and I mean, I took bands and I played, but I always talked to the audience, and I mean, making the transition was a simple thing. I've always done it. Now I'm more at home. I have my instruments back, only they're lighter. I don't have to carry a big Hammond B3. Boy, those were the days. Nothing like, you know, walking around with a Hammond organ. I couldn't take up the flute, right? I always walk in, the flute player come in with his little case, you know, and I look at my B3. I just lugged up the fire escape because it wouldn't even fit up the hallway. Right? And then I'd hear the rain going outside. Because the rain would start, the thunder and the lightning. And when the thing was over, the flute player would go, I'll see ya. Now, what happened was, I was investigating sales training courses years ago to see what these sales trainers knew. And I went to a thing where they had six speakers. And the first one was really quite good. He didn't know a lot, but he was quite good. He was very entertaining and knew a few things. Then when they called the second one, time went by, a little bit more time, they called his name again, and this was in the Cow Palace, by the way, in San Francisco, a big auditorium. Finally, this guy came out, and he was walking like this, and I personally thought it was a comedy routine. Turns out, it was not. This guy came out, walked up, he said, you have to excuse me, he said, I'm very good at what I do, I'm a good salesman. You know, this guy, by the way, sold $5 million worth of insurance face-to-face every year for over 10 years. And everybody wanted to know how he did it. And if they'd all gone one at a time, they would have found out. But there was no way we were going to find out in this room. Because all this guy did was talk about his stomach. He goes, I have trouble with in front of people. He said, you know, my stomach gets all crazy. And I sweat. And I have memory lapses. Now, as I sat there listening to this guy, I thought, so the fuck what? You know, so you have all those things. How do you sell insurance so well? So I thought maybe I'd help him. I raised my hand and I said, can you talk about insurance? You know, the guy goes, well, he said, I think so. Because my psychiatrist said to me that if I just talked about how I felt, you know, suddenly I'd feel comfortable. And I thought, uh-oh, it's going to be a long hour. Because guess what? That's not true. Now, the trick is, and it's a very simple trick once you know it, is that there isn't anything inside of you that matters. When you get up here, when your foot hits this stage, the only thing that matters is the people out here. And if you want to get up here to feel cool, even if you do feel cool, you'll miss it because you won't know. Because I won't let you notice. And I am ruthless about this. The only thing that matters is the state of consciousness of the audience that you're in. And if you pay attention to them and to what you're saying, if you listen to yourself talk on the outside, not on the inside, because you can't. You had teachers that did this. They went, well, today, class, we're going to take a look at American history from 1925 to 1929, the Great Depression. The whole audience goes. By the way, this is going to change your perception of public speaking entirely. When you discover it's hypnosis, how could it be?